All right, here we go. All the stuff that we haven't gotten to yet. Mason and Ireland show, Brian Kamenetsky in for John. Brian, college football has its first cancellation. The HBCU Morehouse College, a Division II school, has canceled its season. Morehouse College President David Thomas was asked why. He says, quote, "I'm not smart enough to know how we can go forward with the season. Every president and AD needs to look at the positive tests. We're only in the training portion, and we're having these positive test results come back. How can we go forward with the season, given that what we know about the virus and think we won't accelerate transmission? Is this a look at the future of college football? How can you play a football season and think that you won't accelerate transmission of the virus?"
I have like a list, like a ranking of sports that I feel like have the best and worst chances to get going.
Yep.
And I think the NBA has a really good chance of making this work.
Me too.
You can kind of work your way down from there. The one that I think has an almost 0% chance is college football. And it's both because you have the least amount of control over the athletes in terms of where, you know, you just, it's too many players in too many schools, and there are certain restrictions you're just not allowed to put on a college student. But more than that, I don't know how half of these schools may be able to have students on campus and in class. And if you can't have kids on campus, if it's too unsafe for you to go to your 8:30 oceanography lecture in person, you can't then turn around and say, but it's okay for you to play Auburn on Saturday. Like, those two positions don't work. And so
think about it this way too. You know, in the NBA, you can test every player. Major League Baseball, test every player. In college football, are you going to test 80 kids every other day? Can you afford that as a program? I just don't know how that's feasible.
No, I agree with you. I think college, the odds of there being any kind of meaningful college football this year are very low. And I hope to be wrong, because that would be great. Yeah. But I just don't see how it happens.
Brian?
Okay. I thought there'd be like that wrinkly paper thing.
Yeah, me too.
The NFL, Steve, has shortened its preseason to just 2 weeks as the league continues to plot its 2020 strategy, as we stay on football here.
Yes.
So I guess shorter preseason is better than longer preseason, whether we have a pandemic or not. But should football be having, should the NFL, I should say, have any preseason at all?
It's a very good question. You know,
thank you.
I actually think preseason should be canceled altogether. Now, I'm a Rams season ticket holder. I think I've got one home game and one road game now in the preseason, if I remember right. I think I've got a game at SoFi against the Chargers, and I've got a game at SoFi against the Broncos. So the Rams will stay in Los Angeles. August the 20th through the 24th, somewhere in that stretch, they'll play the Chargers. And then the 27th through the 31st, they'll play the Broncos. First of all, Sean McVay doesn't even use his preseason. Doesn't even play any of his starters in the preseason. It really is pointless at this point. It's a money grab. And in this particular case, it should be a safety grab. Give yourself an extra month to make sure you've got your protocols in order to give you a chance at a season. Why risk getting things off the tracks as early as the middle of August when the season doesn't start until September 8th?
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, I understand, like, the protocols are going to be different. There's going to be a different game day routine. There's going to be a lot of stuff that teams are going to have to figure out and do dress rehearsals and whatever it might be. But the bottom line is this. The more times you take people and put them together on a field and make them play football, the more likely you are to transmit coronavirus. And so the best thing to do is have fewer opportunities for those teams to get together and mix and all that stuff. I do not understand, particularly since there is no money to be gained, really, I guess maybe other than broadcasting. I don't understand why you would have any.
Yeah, there's no significant money involved. There's no significant money involved. I don't know why you don't put safety first and also give yourself the best chance at a regular season. All right, there is a push in Major League Baseball to remove Kennesaw Mountain Landis's name from the MLB MVP trophies. Landis was the commissioner of Major League Baseball starting in 1920, and Jackie Robinson didn't break the color line until Landis was gone from the job 25 years later. It is believed that one of the reasons why baseball was slow to break the color line was Landis himself. Mike Schmidt, who is a three-time National League MVP, says, if you're looking to expose individuals in baseball's history who promoted racism by continuing to close baseball's doors to men of color, Kenesaw Landis would be a candidate. Removing his name from the MVP trophy would expose the injustice of that era. I'd gladly replace the engraving on my trophies. Brian Kamenetsky, should baseball remove Kenesaw Mountain Landis's name from the MVP award?
Yep, same deal as the John Wayne Airport. And so, you know, there is no rule that says Kenesaw Mountain Landis's name needs to stay on the World Series trophy, which, by the way, I bet nobody even knew what it was. You're calling attention to, you know, it's a way to raise awareness of what that era was, because most people probably don't know. I didn't realize that his name was even on it. And so you don't have to honor these people. He was an important person in the development of baseball, but it didn't need to be done that way. And so, yeah, take his name off. I don't understand what the problem is.
Yeah, I don't even know what the issue is. Of course you take his name off. I mean, he's the reason why it took until Jackie Robinson to break the color line. He promoted racism, as Mike Schmidt said. Take his name off the trophy. It's really easy. And there are people that say, oh, this is revisionist history and you protect our heritage and all that stuff. This is an honor that is given to players. And particularly, like, Barry Larkin has spoken out on this as an African-American player. He won the MVP award. He doesn't want Landis on it. And I don't think baseball should be honoring Kenesaw Mountain Landis in this way.
I agree with you. I mean, look, you can make an argument that Ty Cobb's name is on the Silver Slugger, I think. I could be wrong about that. But, like, stuff with his name, if you have an honor after that. I mean, Ty Cobb is one of the most virulent, awful human beings. Great hitter, but one of the most awful human beings. There's no reason that you can't take their names off of these honoraries. You'll still learn about them in Cooperstown if you go visit the museum and all that. That's where this stuff belongs. You don't have to make an honor out of their names.
Lindsay, try to find out if Ty Cobb's name is on the Silver Slugger Award.
I think there's something with his name on it. I could be wrong. It's happened.
It's to you, Brian.
All right, so last night on the Late Night Happy Hour with the Kamenetsky Brothers, which you can see on ESPNLosAngeles.com every weeknight from 10 to 11, we had Jamie Maggio, who was...
Love Jamie.
She was great, and she was a ton of fun, and we had her on right up to the point where she had to leave our show because she was doing her live hit for KCAL. So she, like, hung up with us, ran to her spot, and did her thing for KCAL. What we learned about Jamie was that she's from New York, from Long Island specifically, and when she moved to California as a kid, got made fun of for her accent and quickly got rid of it. So what Andy and I tried to get her to do was to go do her segment on KCAL with the accent.
With the Long Island accent?
With the Long Island accent. And I said I would give her $20 before and $20 after. Andy offered to match it, and so did a few people on the Periscope chat.
Okay.
We made a joke out of it. It became kind of a running thing. And then I made a joke that I didn't actually have $40 and needed Andy to loan it to me. So that became a thing. I put it out on Twitter. Will you loan me $40? Just to Twitter.
Okay.
What percentage of Twitter do you think is willing to loan me $40?
Well, you are Kamenetsky. I would say 55%.
No, way too high. Only 34% of America was willing.
I thought because it's the Kamenetsky brothers, they're roaming across the station looking for airtime.
So for only 34% of America was willing to loan me $40. What do I make of that? should I be a little offended? What is the correct reaction to this?
I think people are sympathetic to your plight.
What's my plight?
You're doing.
I didn't know I had a plight.
You're doing a Periscope show at 10 o'clock at night. You're doing a Saturday show early in the morning. You're filling in around. They know you're like the the handyman. You're like the Mr. Fix-It guy.
I'm Schneider.
The Schneider, exactly. So, no, I think you should take it as it's very nice that people have volunteered to be kind. Did anybody follow up with you?
No, well, a couple of people are like, do you need money? Like, there were a couple of people who got, I will say, when you, when context free, when you put up a poll, will you loan me $40? You get some concerned responses.
I'm sure.
There were a few people who didn't quite get what we were talking about. And I think we're, but only 34% of Americans will loan me $40. I'm a little concerned by that, that they think I'm not, you know, like trustworthy in that way.
Or that you're just not getting by. They know you got kids.
No, but that would mean that they would loan me the money if they were sympathetic.
Right. You're right.
Or they hate my children. One of the two.
By the way, did Jamie Maggio do the Long Island accent on the news?
Not. We checked, and I didn't hear it. I actually, somebody sent us a clip of her entire thing last night, and she did not, which was probably smart, although... In this media environment, I'm telling you, because there were people on the Periscope chat that were willing to throw in like $50 each and all that. She probably could have walked away with a clean $350. I might have taken it. You know, you just don't know what's coming up every day now.
I've lived in L.A. 28 years. I still will sometimes my Ohio accent will show up. It shows up on a couple of words in particular. Lindsay, it might for you, too. Say M-O-M.
M-O-M?
Yeah.
The word.
Oh, mom.
Mom. Say C-O-L. Where did you go to university? What do you call that?
College.
Yeah, mom and college are the two words that come out for me. That my Ohio accent comes out. Mom and college. All right. The Atlanta Hawks have committed their arena as an early voting site for Georgia's upcoming elections. The organization has also challenged other NBA teams to do the same. I think actually the Detroit Pistons did the same as of today. The 700,000 square foot facility where the Hawks play holds 16,000 people for basketball games and up to 21,000 for concerts. It will be configured to hold hundreds of ballot marking devices spaced throughout the arena floor, and officials have promised social distancing protocols to keep voters safe. Hundreds of arena staff will be trained as volunteer poll workers. Do you think, Brian, that more arenas may follow suit, and would Staples Center make a good early voting location?
I think it would be a fantastic thing if this became the norm, where you have these large centrally located places where people could get in and out with trained volunteers. Like we need to make it easier to vote in this country, particularly during a pandemic. It needs to be easier to vote. And I think with like a team like the, you know, a place like the Hawks, like the upshot is the first like five or six people who get there, they could be put on the team. Like
you're right.
You can make
the team. Exactly.
Right. You know, you do that at Rays Stadium or Marlins Stadium. You could find some talent that they don't actually have. So
absolutely
anything that makes it easier to vote, I think is a good thing. And so I am 100% behind it.
Yeah. And by the way, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Minnesota Lynx organizations both have made November 3rd, a company holiday, Election Day, a company holiday. And I've always thought Election Day should be a national holiday in the United States.
It's that we do it during the week when people are working and expect them to work around it and then complain why people can't get to it. And then we make them stand in line for 6 hours.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, exactly.
Like, none of it is good for democracy. So, again, make it easier to vote, give people a day off, or make it on a Saturday. And give people those day off. Really, you know, make it easier. Just everything should be make it
easier.
Even
in California, I waited 3 hours to vote during the primary.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I was in a monster line, and of course, social distanced, and then they've got this new keypad thing that everybody's using that was more complicated, that had to be explained repeatedly to me. Maybe other people got it the first time around, had to be explained repeatedly to me. I waited a long time. So, yeah, more places to vote, easier to vote, make it a day off for everybody, give everybody an opportunity. Brian.
All right. So, Steve, I am sure we're both on the same mailing list here. You have probably by now seen the pictures of the completed video board at SoFi Stadium. It is 120 yards long.
Yep.
First ever 4K HDR video system in a stadium, largest LED content playback. It took about 85 people to create content for it. It has 80 million pixels, 260 speakers, 56 5G antennas. Basically, it's just like the TV at Ireland's house.
Yeah.
So when do you think you'll be able to see it? Like in person?
Yeah. You know, I find it hard to believe that these exhibition games are going to happen that we just talked about. And I'm guessing, I'm going to guess that the NFL season is going to happen. And the first time I will see it is Sunday night, September 13th, when the Rams play the Cowboys.
Ooh, that would be great. Oh, my God, that would be great.
Now, it may be just a percentage of people allowed in to the stadium. It may not be 100%. Maybe it'll be 25% capacity.
Oh, yeah, it's going to have to be something like that.
But if it is 25% capacity, I'm going in. Like, the more I think about it, the more I think, you know, if I was given the opportunity, I don't know why I would be. If I was given the opportunity to go into the bubble, I would go. I would go. To me, it's a unique experience.
I think Juan would send you.
Yeah, I'm sure I would. He would absolutely buy the plane ticket.
he'll drive you there.
But I mean, you are in the middle of things. It's this feeling that I have when I'm at an Olympics. I've had the opportunity to do, I don't know, 7 or 8 Olympics. And you feel like you're in the middle of the world. Those reporters who are inside the bubble are going to literally be in the center of what everybody in the world is talking about. And those are experiences and, you know, could maybe won't go well. Hopefully will go
the
well.
The overwhelming
might not
experience
go well.
Would be boredom.
I don't know that. I don't know that. There will be.
You can't do anything.
Yeah, but there'll be as many as 8 games played a day.
You're gonna get that'll get old. 8 games. There's only so much. Like, and all you can do is go back. Like, here's what I think what they actually might do is for season ticket holders like you, if you can't get people in, how much do you think it would benefit like Goodwill season ticket holders, whatever it might be, where 2,000 people at a time, 100 and whatever people at a time, you open up the stadium, open up the field, and project movies up on the Oculus thing, and let people just socially distance and watch stuff inside the stadium, take a tour, get a feel for that. So you guys still get to be the first people in and pay off the fact that you got your PSLs and your season tickets. But I actually think they're going to be open for something like that for people like you before you actually get to see football. That'd be kind of cool, right?
Yeah, no, it would be cool. It would be cool. Yeah, I can't wait for it. I'm disappointed because I was waiting for this new stadium. I've been going to all the games at the Coliseum. I bought my personal seat licenses. I mean, I was really, really excited about this.
You're in the Ramley.
Part of the Ramley, exactly. No longer Section 6. I don't know what section I'm in anymore. But yeah, I was really looking forward to it. And now it's going to be limited to whatever degree, like everything else is in the world. Coming up next for you, what Frank Vogel says about Dwight Howard and whether or not he will be coming to the bubble for the Lakers, plus how will J.R. Smith be used, according to Coach Vogel. That's coming up next for you. Mason in Ireland, Brian Kibanitsky in for John, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, school is out for summer, maybe longer.
Yeah, this part right here.
Don't know.
Forever.
Don't know. If you haven't been paying attention to stuff today, we'll just pass this along. We know you got other places to get this information. But today, indoor restaurants, wineries, tasting rooms, movie theaters, family entertainment centers, zoos and museums, card rooms, and bars must all close in L.A. and Orange County. And, of course, the beaches are closed this weekend. So that thing is still going on.
Yeah.
So,
oh, by the way.
So earlier today, Alex Caruso did a Zoom call, and he talked about replacing Avery Bradley.
Obviously, I understand Avery's decision. You know, we're brothers in arms throughout the whole season, and anything to support him and his family, I'm 100% going to do if I had the same – scenario, I'd probably make the same decision. As far as basketball goes, got to fill his role. Might not be with one person, but, you know, this team's done a great job all year when guys have been out of stepping up and filling a role or a need, whether it be Bron missing a game or a guard being out for a couple games with injury. So I'm not sure if I'm going to be the sole provider of everything that Avery did. That's a lot to ask for just because of how good he is at what he does. But I'm definitely going to be ready to fill part of that gap.
And, you know, he will be part of filling that gap. I think KCP is probably going to get the bulk of what Avery Bradley was getting, only because KCP has been especially good this year and has been especially good defensively.
I think he'll start. Maybe, like, Caruso has been one of the best guards in the league defensively, particularly in his fourth quarter numbers are insane in terms of his you know, net rating and things like that, playing with LeBron and AD in fourth quarters. It's like that combo is like one of the best in the league. KCP is going to start. I'd be shocked if that's because that's what they did before. I think Caruso is going to finish a lot of games.
You think he'll be in
really
the finishing lineup?
Absolutely. I think it's going to be matchup dependent to some degree.
So, I mean, but Danny Green, LeBron, Kuzma, I would assume, and AD are going to be in the finishing lineup.
I would not assume Kuzma always.
Really?
I wouldn't. He hasn't played consistently enough over the course of the year. I mean, obviously, LeBron and AD, I think if Dwight is available and he's there, certain teams, you could definitely see Dwight playing late in fourth quarters. Danny Green's going to be on the floor, and then it's that other guy. And maybe it is Kuzma, depending on who the other point guard is. Like, the Lakers have a lot of different combinations that they can use because they don't really need a traditional point guard on the floor That's what LeBron is doing. But you do need one secondary guy.
We need somebody that can defend point guards.
Right. You need somebody who can defend point guards and also be another trigger point with the offense. KCP, that's not why he's on the floor. He's a lot like Avery Bradley in that regard. But Bradley didn't finish every game either. So I just believe that without Bradley there, you're going to see more Alex Caruso down the stretch. You'll see some Kuz, but I don't think it's guaranteed that Kuzma finishes games.
Interesting. Here is Caruso on actually being inside the bubble, going into the bubble.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the more unique aspects of an NBA season or NBA playoffs is the mental war of attrition. You know, there's always been this mental war of attrition throughout the playoffs as far as taking it one game at a time and not putting too much weight into a single game. But now you add this element of being away from loved ones for an amount of time, being isolated away from the outside world, just stuff that's not normal. And that's not a usual circumstance for playing basketball games and going through the playoffs, trying to chase a championship. But I mean, this is something personally that I kind of relish. I'm looking forward to the challenge of lasting, you know, of being the team that can be the mentally toughest, the mentally strongest, and say, yeah, we might be on this isolated campus for 3 months, but we have a goal, we have a mission, and then it's not going to affect us trying to get to that end goal and finish the job.
Yeah, I think that the team that treats the bubble with the most seriousness is going to be the team that prevails. You know, I think the better the team is, you know, I think Milwaukee, I think the Lakers, I think the Clippers, they're going to treat the sanctity of the bubble. I like that phrase, the sanctity of the bubble. Once you go outside,
Is that a Steve Mason original?
A Steve Mason original, sanctity of the bubble. Once you violate the sanctity of the bubble, you have the potential to hurt your team. And to hurt the entire league. It's going to be so critical. And Stephen A. was on yesterday. Do we have the Stephen A. guys leaving the bubble for recreational activities? Hit that, Funch.
Here's the reason you got to be worried. I wanted to hold off on saying this, y'all, but I can't hold it more. Do we really think that our the recreational activities, what these guys are accustomed to, are going to be compromised for 3 months? I mean, somebody's got to say it. You really, really think that people are going to be without their wives or their woman, okay? I mean, the guys that are married without their wives, the guys that ain't married without their woman, you really, really think they honoring a bubble for 3 months and are going to deprive? Somebody got to tell the truth.
Stephen A., they've set up ping pong tournaments.
They're allowed to bring their significant other down there after a month.
Hey, listen, after a month, I just said forget 3 months. They're going to struggle with 3 weeks. Why you think they won in Vegas? Listen, can we stop? Can we stop? The issue right now is that you in Orlando for the first month, you got to be alone. You understand? Trust you me. When guys wanted to go to Vegas, because they definitely wanted to go to Vegas, I know this for a fact, Jay, I know you know they wanted to be in Vegas. You could have rented out the Wynn and the Encore or something like that. You could have done that, all right, and had some semblance of a bubble, and cats would have been happy. The reason why they're looking at Orlando, they're like, damn, you got to go through gates. You got to go through a lot of hoops just to do anything. That's a problem for them. Somebody got to say it. These brothers, you said 3 months. I'm saying 3 weeks is a struggle. That's a struggle. Let's just talk about
what
it is.
Stephen,
can we stop playing the game? That's what's going on. Say what? Say what, Max? What'd you say?
So what are they going to do? What are you saying? After 3 weeks, what happens?
Oh, I'm telling you, they're going to violate the bubble. That's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you right now.
No more distancing, Max.
Hey, listen. They're going to practice social distancing with the general public. But I'm sorry. When it comes to either your wife or if you're not married, your girl, it's a struggle, okay? I'm just telling y'all. That's what's going on here. Somebody's got to say it.
Okay, so it's a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one that everybody is going to have to deal with if they want to win.
I mean, look, I think there is going to be a grading kind of going up. Like the more chance your team has to win,
the more serious you're going to take the ball.
Like Damian Lillard, this, I think it was today, even said, like, in an interview with the Blazers media, he, quote, "My confidence ain't great," Lillard said about how closely people will follow the bubble protocols. But that's coming from a guy whose team might not even make the playoffs. So,
correct.
Like, I think the less chance you have to win, the less chance. But like, there are going to be a lot of dudes when like family is allowed in or whatever. It was like, I didn't know that guy had that many cousins,
right.
There's gonna be some creative definitions of what family constitutes family inside the bubble. So I get what Stephen A is getting at, for sure.
Yeah,
these,
and I mean,
young men with that are used to access.
Yeah, I mean, but if you're guy at the end of the bench who has an itch and you go get it scratched,
mm-hmm,
you can bring the coronavirus back and spoil your whole team.
Oh, yeah. No, again, there's going to be an enormous amount of pressure on good teams to not screw it up. Can you imagine being the guy?
Being the guy.
The guy who gives LeBron James coronavirus.
Oh.
Like, that is not a good, like, you want to be run out of town, run out of this town on a rail? That is a good way to do it.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. That's why I talk about sanctity of the bubble, man.
Yeah.
Sanctity of the bubble.
I picture, too, like the way you say it. Like, if somebody violates the sanctity of the bubble, there's like a big ceremony with people in robes. And like, you, Jared Dudley.
It's like the end of Black Panther. There's a duel.
Right, it's going to be very serious, like,
yes,
if that happens. So,
all right.
Yeah, don't do it.
Coming up next, I want to think forward a little bit.
Okay.
I want to think forward. The Lakers are going to be the number one seed.
Yes.
The Lakers are going to face, I think, most likely Memphis in the first round. But who would they play next, and how do they match up? That's coming up next for you. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, Mason and Ireland, big Wednesday. And don't forget, tomorrow night, 6:15, it is the Great Hot Dog Eating Challenge, me versus Alan Sliwa. I promise you, I will kick his ass. You will see it live on all of our social media streams. It'll happen. And Lindsay, you think disgusting the way I'm going to eat the hot dogs, right?
I mean, you do what you got to do, but it's not going to be a pretty sight.
You dunk the bun in the water, and then you... All in one glurp.
Lovely.
Yeah. All in one glurp. That's the way Joey Chestnut talked about today.
It doesn't get any better when you keep doing it.
Yeah. All right. So we're talking Lakers. First of all, let's hear from Frank Vogel. Frank Vogel did a Zoom call today, talked about J.R. Smith joining the team.
I haven't had a chance to work with J.R. yet. I did speak to him, but it was on just a welcome to the team type of basis, type of conversation. We'll get into all that when he's fully acclimated and able to be with our team, in particular when we get down to Orlando. And in terms of what he brings to the table, just the experience factor. I mean, this guy's a big-time player. He's proven it over the course of his career. We know he can help us. We almost added him earlier in the year when we added Deion Waiters, and now we have the luxury of having both. We're not going to ask him to come in and be Avery Bradley. He's going to come in and be J.R. Smith. He's going to, just fill that position more than fill that role. Avery's loss is obviously a huge loss for us, but, we're a next man up team. J.R. is going to help come in and help fill that void, but we have a lot of guys in that position that will do the same.
So, J.R. Smith, Brian, what are your expectations?
None. My expectation is that we never need to find out how much J.R. Smith has, because if we do, it's probably bad.
We dug too far down the bench.
Yes. If we see a lot of J.R. Smith, it's because things have gone wrong. Guys have gotten hurt or whatever it might be. Now, he could play in those 8 games. Because they're going to want to test it out and see what it is.
Sure.
Smith has not been a good NBA player in at least 3 seasons, at least.
Right, probably since 2017.
Right, and he's been out of the league essentially for the last 2.
Yeah.
There's a reason they signed Deion Waiters first instead of signing J.R. Smith when they could have, because they had the opportunity. All of these things, I'm not saying they made a mistake by signing him or they should have gotten someone else, because there really isn't anyone. And, they're familiar with him. LeBron knows him. He's a clutch guy. Like, you don't have to do it. This is a hard time to be trying people out. Like, it's hard to get people into your facility. But if you think that J.R. Smith is going to be an important part of what they do going forward, I hope the answer is no.
By the way, if you're just tuning in, there's no decision from Dwight Howard about whether or not he will participate. Frank Vogel did indicate they are hopeful and they are optimistic, but there's no final decision from Dwight about whether or not he will play in the bubble. And boy, I hope he does. That would be a devastating blow if Dwight Howard elects not to go into the bubble. Let's talk real quick about 3 teams that the Lakers could face in the second round. By the way, do you agree with my contention that Memphis is probably going to be the 8?
Yeah, I'd be shocked. I mean, for them to fall out of that playoff possible place, it seems really, really difficult.
If they've got a 4-game lead, though, there's no playoff.
Correct. But I think teams can get inside of that. I think they have a great shot. I think Portland is really interesting only because they have Damian Lillard, who is awesome. Yep. And they also get Nurkic and Collins back. So their front court, they're going to be very different than the team that was playing before the stoppage. And so...
Right.
I think that gives them a real shot. But, it's going to be Memphis versus someone in that little playoff, I think. That would be my prediction.
So it's Lakers 1, Clippers 2, Denver's the 3 right now, then a little cushion, and you get Houston, OKC, and Utah. So you're talking about a second-round matchup against one of those 3, Lakers 2-0 against Utah. Bojan Bogdanovic done for the year, Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley not having a good year. Lakers are undefeated against Oklahoma City. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been great. Chris Paul has been great. Lakers 1-1 against Houston. This is the small ball thing now. Russell Westbrook, unbelievable once they cleared the bigs like Clint Capella off that roster. Who is the toughest matchup, do you think, for the Lakers in the second round?
I think you're actually limiting the field too much. Because if you break down who, the amount of games separating you know, 7-5 and 3-5. Like, it's probably unlikely that the Clippers fall all the way back to a four seed, but Denver, if they don't play well, could be. Like, I think any of the other teams.
So you think Denver could fall into the group?
It is possible that Denver could be a four. It's possible that Dallas could get up to a four or up to a five. I think, you know, okay. I think it's any of the teams that are left, except for whoever's in the eight, and probably not the Clippers. And something would have to go really wrong for the Clippers to end up there. But
so you think Dallas could get up and get the five?
They could get a five. Mathematically, absolutely. It's a couple games.
Well, really, I mean, mathematically, yeah. Yeah, mathematically, it's possible. You're right.
We don't know what any of this stuff is going to look like. And so, like, I find every team to be scary in one way or another. I think Utah is probably the worst because losing Bogdanovich, really hurts them.
But the flip side is
that was still a team that there was on pace to win 50 games. It's sort of vaguely disappointing as they feel. But I mean, Houston is a little scary, particularly if Dwight can't play. The Lakers can't use size if it works that way. You know, try to change the game a little bit in that way. You know, because Harden and Westbrook kind of hit the wall. Harden particularly kind of hit the wall before the pandemic, but now he's going to be fresh and healthy and ready to go. OKC had the second most wins in the NBA after Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
they had more wins than the Lakers. So, like, that's a really difficult team to play.
So who is, in my estimation, Houston is still the team you don't want to face in the second round.
They're too weird. And the superstar power on that team is really good. I don't really want to play OKC because I feel like remember, like, Memphis in the grit and grind days?
Yeah, sure.
You would play them and you would beat them, but they take so much out of you in that round that you're hurt for the next round.
Right.
I feel like that's Oklahoma City this year. Very versatile. Playing five, six, seven games against Chris Paul is not fun. Nobody likes that. I mean, by design, Chris Paul makes that not fun for you.
But I think Utah is the least scary.
I think so, particularly if Rudy Gobert really is limited because, you know, he said a couple days ago, I'm still not fully recovered. If he doesn't get all the way back,
isn't that amazing? It all started with him and he's not all the way back yet.
Right. I mean, that's why when you see guys say, I'm not sure I want to go do this, I might just want to stay home. That you get why, because, you know, you, me, a normal person, we get coronavirus and, you know, we struggle a little bit, or maybe it takes away 5% or so of our lung capacity and we're not quite the athlete that we once were.
Right.
It doesn't matter, really. If you're a world-class athlete and you make your living this way, you lose 5%, 10% of your lungs or whatever.
Believe me, it's all about getting an edge. You're absolutely right.
You could be done at that point. So yeah. I get it completely.
All right, coming up next for you is Game of Games. It is my game today. By the way, somebody said on Twitter, and I agree with them, that Lindsay, you did win the month of June, but we did start late. So your win of the month has an asterisk by it.
Okay, cool.
It wasn't a full month.
But you don't believe in asterisks, so.
No, in this case, I do.
Oh, okay.
I believe in them when they're convenient.
Like I said, anytime that it's not you or your team, then you want an asterisk. So I get it. That's cool.
Yep. That is how I roll. It's exactly how I roll. You figured it out. All right. It is my game coming up next, and it's called Something, Anything, Everything. Brian Kamenetsky will play. Funch will play. Lindsay will play. Game of Games is next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Woo-woo! Game of Games. Mason and Ireland show. First day of the brand new month, by the way. Congratulations on surviving exactly the first 6 months of 2020. What a hellacious road this has been.
We're only 6 months in.
We've got, just hang on, people. We got 6 months of this left.
Do you want to hear my man. Theory? Here's what I think should happen. Until we're done, like until stuff really gets better, don't flip the calendar. Just if we need another 2 or 3 months of 2020, that's fine. I do not want 2021 tainted. I want a good, clean year where we can all feel good and we'll just go that way.
It's got to be better. It's got to be better.
It's got to be better, but it won't be. It won't be if we just necessarily just let the calendar flip.
We might
have to stop it and extend 2020 by a couple weeks just to make sure we're okay.
Yeah, it has been just a hellacious year.
It's been awful.
Obviously.
We're only halfway done.
Yeah, no, it's brutal. It's July the 1st, and here we go for another 6 months.
You know what I like to think? Instead of thinking it's only halfway done, we say, you know what? We already got halfway down. Let's get through the rest.
That's it. But like if
6 months down,
like,
six to go.
If 2020 was happening in like Avengers world, like people would look at Thanos snapping his finger as like the fourth worst thing that happened that year. Like it's barely in the top five. That's how bad 2020 has been.
Yep. Well, congratulations. You made it 6 months. All right. We're going to play a round of Game of Games. This game is called Something, Anything, Everything. Something, Anything, Everything. This is a series of questions with very easy answers. Your name is your buzzer. I've got seven of these. Ring in when you think you know the answer. All right. Lindsay, you got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Funch, you got it?
Yes, I do.
All right. And Brian, you got it. Here we go. If something is very expensive, it will cost you what two limbs?
Lindsay.
Brian.
Lindsay.
Ooh. Arm and a leg.
Arm and a leg. Lindsay's on the board. She's getting really good at games. Who is the NBA player with the most career points?
Brian.
Lindsay.
Brian.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is correct, yes. Number three. What is the name of Steve Mason's podcast?
Lindsay.
Brian. Lindsay.
No.
Culture Pop.
Culture Pop. Lindsay got there first.
Oh, no, she did.
My
not.
Say is final. Lindsay got there first.
Get over
it. All right. It's Lindsay 2, BCAM 1, Funch asleep. Here's number four. What's black and white and red all over?
Lindsay.
Lindsay.
A newspaper.
A newspaper is correct. Lindsay, a commanding 3-1 lead over Brian Kamenetsky. Funch nowhere to be seen. What pitcher has more wins than anybody in baseball history? Lindsay.
Oh, wait. I thought you were going to go single game. Most in baseball history.
Three, two, one. Most wins in baseball history.
Cy Young, right?
Brian, Cy Young is correct. Yes. It is Lindsay 3.
I was going to guess that, but didn't want to risk sounding stupid.
Funch nowhere. All right, here is number six.
Dumb guess. You throw it out there, Lindsay. Come on.
Number six. What was the title of the ESPN documentary about Bruce Lee?
Lindsay.
Brian.
Lindsay.
No!
it was
three,
water.
Two. One.
Water.
No.
Something
funch,
water.
Funch.
No.
Well, Brian had already rung in. Brian?
Be water.
Be water is correct. And all of a sudden...
It's close.
Is Brian Kamenetsky 3, Lindsay 3, Funch, you're playing for
Pride.
Pride?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Last one. Who was the third president of the United States?
Brian.
Brian. Three.
Jefferson.
Correct.
Oh,
Brian Kamenetsky steals the win.
Good job.
Yep.
Thank you.
Washington Adams Jefferson. Got it right.
You know, I'm not a permanent part of this show, but I am winning right now in July.
You are up 1-0 in July.
Yep.
Absolutely right. You know, it's really disturbing me, and we'll talk to Sliwa about this coming up. This is a poll that ESPN LA put out a little while ago. Over under 8. What do you think will happen in the Venice Mace versus Alan Sliwa hot dog eating contest? You know what's winning? Mason under 8, Sliwa over 8. That is absolutely ridiculous.
Well,
does anybody really believe I'm going to lose this?
Yeah, clearly a lot of people do.
Does anybody know how competitive I am? There is no friggin' way I am losing this under any circumstances.
That's exactly what Amanda said.
You guys have brutalized Alan Sliwa for weeks and weeks and weeks. This is his opportunity for revenge. Like, I feel
I think,
that.
I think, you know, having a little fun with somebody and then calling it brutalizing someone.
Brutalized.
Crossing the line just a bit.
We're like, just goofing on each other the way we all goof on each other.
Oh, are they going to back up the bus on Sliwa? Oh, there it goes. Beep.
Hey, we back
Mr.
up the bus on you.
Yeah.
Right. And I get back out there every day and I just keep going.
Yes.
And I'm not entering a hot dog eating contest with you because I don't need to win it that bad. But
so Yeah,
I'm just saying, I feel like we're underestimating the secret competitive drive of Alan Sliwa. I feel like there's something in there just waiting to get out.
I will.
A champion hot dog.
There's no way I'm losing. There's no way I'm losing. There's no way I'm losing. No way. Did you get that?
Well, you don't want to work until 9. That would be crazy.
That would be terrible. I will work my ass off. Eat as many hot dogs as it takes to avoid working a 3-hour shift with Sliwa. All right, coming up next for you is Crosstalk. Sliwa will be here. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Yeah, you know what my dad always taught me? He said there are two places in every race, first and last. Tomorrow night, 6:15, I will finish first. And Sliwa, you will finish dead last.
Mace, how much are you looking forward to this? Because I feel like this is big time for you.
Look, see, you're downplaying it.
No, not downplaying it. But you are, I can tell, this is big for you tomorrow. Like, you're really looking forward to it.
Well, you know, here's what it is, Sliwa. Mm-hmm. So, you know, since we don't have sports, we've gotten excited about unusual things. Like, the Last Dance was like the Super Bowl, right? Yep. We watched the Belmont. We watched rounds of golf. We watched Peyton Manning play against Tom Brady. We watched all these things. And they were all huge. Can you imagine the bang we're going to get for the hot dog eating contest tomorrow night on social media? There is nothing that draws eyeballs more than two guys making absolute pigs of themselves.
This is the best part. Lindsay, do you remember how this all came up? We talked about how gross is it to watch the hot dog eating competition. You
know? That's exactly what I told Brian today when he asked how this happened.
Next thing you know, 4 days later, we're going to do it ourselves. Oh, I love that.
Now, are you nervous? Are you sort of afraid of this moment? Because some people, you know, I'm a red light player, man. Mm-hmm. That red light goes on, bam, I'm there. I'm competitive. I'm going to win. What's your mentality going into this tomorrow night?
So definitely not afraid. Let's just say I've never done it before, so I have absolutely no idea what to expect. So what I am going to do is this. I am 100% going to try and eat as many hot dogs as I can in 7 minutes and 10 seconds. I mean, the whole thing. But I have absolutely no idea how it's going to go. I don't know if I'm going to get full or I'm just going to be so nauseated that, you know, I have no idea what's going to happen. And Mace, I can't even think of, like, I can't watch you do anything. So I'm going to try not to watch you because I have a feeling – just made by the slurping noises that you've made over the last couple of days. Like, it's not probably going to be the prettiest thing. So
it's not going to be pretty.
But Mace, I still feel like there's a lot of questions we gotta figure
okay.
out. Okay,
all we right, really let's deal with that. Let's attack these questions. What are your concerns?
Okay, so the hot dog.
Yeah.
I think we go Nathan's. I mean, that's what they call it, right? I mean, we might as well. You had. Joey Chestnut earlier on, so I think
right.
we just go Nathan's, right?
It is the official hot dog of hot dog eating contests. Yeah.
Lindsay, what do you think? You think we go Nathan's?
I think you gotta.
Can we get that at the regular grocery store?
I think so.
Generally,
can
yes.
I Instacart that?
Yeah.
Would it get there fast enough? That's the thing. You got to be able to get the order in.
Yeah, like, yeah,
you need to be
it.
Eating the same. There needs to be uniformity in the
yeah,
hot dog
the
from brand and weight and everything.
Think,
like, it's all got to be the same.
I think you can get Nathan's hot dogs at pretty much any grocery store in LA.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
Okay, so we're going to go with Nathan's hot dogs.
Okay, here's another question.
Bun.
Wonder Bread buns.
Oh, you want to go Wonder Bread buns?
Easy as it gets. You don't want to get fancy with it needing, like, you know, like sausage rolls or
no,
something.
No, we need simple. Definitely need simple.
Wonder Bread buns.
Same.
I think that makes the most sense. That's uniform.
Okay.
Nathan's hot dogs, Wonder Bread buns.
All right.
Do I hear you taking notes?
Yeah, someone's clearly.
Who's actually writing
notes
this down? Alan, are you?
I'm 100% going through all the rules because I got to figure this out. This is not a preparation that I had in mind in sports talk radio. But okay, here's another question.
Hey, Alan, how many times do I have to tell you? This is the entertainment business, man.
Deal with it.
We're here to entertain.
Roll with the punches.
I only know what I know, so I'm just going. Every day is a little different, so I'm rolling
okay,
with the punches
got it.
Here.
Okay, this one's
so
definitely different.
Here's another question.
Alan, I've been talking you up the entire show. I'm starting to waver.
Yeah, you sound, there's a lack of confidence here.
You don't sound confident here.
It's the opposite of Eye of the Tiger.
Are you rope-a-doping? That could be it. Are you doing the old rope-a-dope? Of course, so if you are.
Well, if he is, he's not going to tell you.
Right, you can't tell. Text me if you're doing the rope-a-dope.
But just based on what just happened over the last 3 minutes,
yeah.
What part is the confidence wavering? Like, what happened to I asked how many, what kind of hot dogs and what kind of buns, and the confidence.
It's just
done.
Your
it's
tone.
The excessive note-taking, the tone. I think you're worried, like the fear of getting it wrong, whatever it might be.
I'm not
feeling like this. This is the moment. Like, Mason is incredibly cocky. And
yes.
Thinks you're going to quit after like a hot dog and a half.
I think you're going to you will not entertain the people. I think you're going to wind up with two hot dogs and be satisfied.
I think it's going to be disgusting, and I'm going to take down as many hot dogs as I possibly can in 7 minutes and 10 seconds. So,
and you're not going to
quit. Do the same. How do you quit? Like, you
just
mean,
stop
like,
eating. A, in other words,
no,
stop.
Amanda
chewing.
Brown. Well, how I'll do you quit? Amanda 10. Brown quit in the middle of their donut
she did.
Contest.
She gave up.
She just flat
out. What if one of us throw up? Then one.
Oh, it's over.
Keep going.
It's over. You lose.
No.
Yeah.
By
you,
official,
you have to stop because then yeah. It's you got rid of the dogs that you can't that can't count.
You're right. So vomiting is an automatic DQ.
Yes.
I could only imagine how many people might vomit just watching this thing. Okay, the other question then is this. How many hot dogs do you think you're going to take? Like, is it as many as you can have, or are we just buying a 12-pack? Probably both confident we're not going to get to 12, and it's 7 minutes and 10 seconds, or it's 12 hot dogs.
I think you should buy two 12-packs and prepare 20.
Prepare 20 hot dogs.
In 7
wow.
minutes and 10 seconds with the
or
bun?
Prepare 15. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My target is 8. I think if I do 8, that'll be pretty impressive. Slee, will you feel like more like a 4 or 5?
No, I think I'd go toe for toe. Like, I think I'm mentally getting there now to where it's like, all right, let's just freaking take down as many dogs as we possibly can.
Taking down the dogs.
Just take out as many dogs as you can.
Now you're talking. Yeah, and if you blow chunks, it's over.
Yes.
That
if
ends
you
it.
Blow chunks, it's over. Yep, you're disqualified.
I gotta be honest with you. I feel like if you take like a commanding lead, if you get out and you start strong Ooh. And you just start mowing through hot dogs, I'm telling you, I think Mason could crumble.
No,
I feel
no.
like I don't know. I feel like he's a front runner. Like if you let Mason get, he's gonna be like Tiger on Sunday. If you let him get out of the lead and he's got
his
Sunday and he's wearing his
building.
Red shirt
mm-hmm.
or
oh,
whatever,
yeah.
he's not going to lose. But if you make him come from behind, how many wins did Tiger have in all those majors coming from behind? Like one. It
yeah.
never happens. Mason's a front runner. If you get out by a hot dog 2 minutes in,
oh,
I don't
yeah.
think he's coming back.
If you're a dog up and I start playing catch up, that is going to be tough. You do not want – yeah, I'm not going to fall down by a dog. You'll be down a dog. You're going to be playing – that first dog is going to go so fast, you're going to be down a dog like that.
Mace, be honest. Have you ever done this with a hot dog ever?
No.
Will you practice like anything tonight? Like don't
no.
practice please tonight. Okay,
no.
So you're walking in. You're walking in tomorrow.
This requires no lessons. Eat really fast. That's all. Eat really fast. That's the lesson. That's basically what we got from Joey Chestnut. Eat really fast. It's not that hard.
No, he gave some – there were some tips in there.
Oh, so you listened.
Listen, if I'm the rundown, if I'm seeing the rundown and Joey
yeah.
Chestnut's coming on to talk about a hot dog eating contest tomorrow, what am I supposed to do? Not
now,
take
he
that
says
data?
If you don't want to dip the bun, don't dip the bun.
He actually said he had to train himself to not be grossed out by dipping the bun.
Are you going
to
dip the bun?
You 100% have to dip the bun.
Yeah, you have to dip the bun.
Yeah.
There's
not according
to
Joey Chestnut. He said it's not a difference in between 8 and 12. It's a difference between 50 and 75. That's what the bun does.
Am I the
you
only person
50
who feels
without.
Like this sounds like a euphemism for other things? Are you dipping the bun? I don't know. I might not dip the bun. Who's dipping the bun?
Yes, you are.
Oh, Slee
yes,
was
you
a
are the only one Slee that is thinking a, that right now.
Slee was a bun dipper. We know that.
Yes.
You know.
No, it'll be. Not- I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about it. And you know, I'm gonna hold this over you for a long time. Because we've come up with stakes, right? Mm-hmm. If I lose, I've got to do your entire friggin' show tomorrow night.
Is that the stake? I didn't even know if we still decided. Is that?
Yeah,
is that
the that's the stake. I've just okay. got to stay on. So what's the stake if I win?
I don't know. What is it?
I'll tell you what. Why don't we tweet at Venice Mace, M-A-S-E. If I win, what is the stake? What price does Allen have to pay?
It has to be comparable.
It has to be comparable. Well, I'm not going to let you do my show.
Well, I know that. What I'm saying is it has to be – it's got to be even playing field here.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Tweet me at Venice Mace. All right.
So we're buying 24 hot dogs. That's what we're doing. We're buying two packs?
Two packs.
Okay.
And 24 buns.
Why limit yourselves?
Yeah,
Buy as many hot dogs as you want.
I'm not getting
Pile
past
them up
24.
In front of you.
I'm not
no
getting past 24.
And no one's helping you, right? Nobody's helping. You just this is all clock starts. You're all on your own. And
yeah, I'm gonna have a pile of hot dogs in front of me, and I'm gonna start eating when the clock goes.
Okay, another question: are the buns and the dog? We got to go one and one, right? They don't have to be together. You could do them together. It doesn't matter. Correct.
I think you have to go bun dog or dog bun dog bun.
Okay, let's say separate. When they're prepared, when you have your pile of hot dogs, they have to be in the buns. And then how you want to disassemble them from there is up to you.
Right. But one dog at a time. So dog bun, or bun dog, bun dog.
Yep.
Yeah, that's they, important.
They should be on separate plates. I think if they're on separate plates,
no,
we can get
no,
more down.
No,
we can get
no,
more
that's
down.
Not a hot dog. If the dog is not on the bun, it's not a hot dog. That's just a bun.
I'm going to see Nathan's how they do it. We're gonna find out the official.
They put them in the buns. You put the hot dog in the bun, and if you want to take them apart, then that's your prerogative. We need them for scorekeeping purposes to all look the same.
Can I? I'm going to throw something.
If you only eat like three hot dogs or five hot dogs, but you eat six buns, you only get credit for five hot dogs.
Yeah, for five hot dogs, exactly. I want to throw something out here. This Lindsay just pointed out to me. This is Boomer Esiason. He says, he asked this question, are SEC teams and Clemson seeking COVID-19 herd immunity before college football season? So Boomer suggested on the Boomer and Geo show on WFAN that college football teams in the SEC, as well as Clemson, may be seeking COVID-19 herd immunity before the season starts. He says, quote, I got to be really careful here because I don't want to say that this is an accusation. I don't want to. I was thinking the other day about what is going on with the SEC teams down south, and Clemson included, who's obviously an ACC team. A lot of their players are coming down with COVID-19, oddly enough. So are they trying to herd immunity their teams so these guys can get sick now as opposed to getting sick during the college football season, if in fact there is one? Is that for real? Can that possibly be true?
It's very bold to say. That's very bold to say. You know, to just to kind of say that, I understand what he's saying. How many times have we did our show when we say Alabama had this many players, LSU had this many, and Clemson obviously being one of those teams. But I mean,
but the idea that a college football program would literally sicken their players in order to get herd immunity is obscene.
It's not a thing. It's not, and it's medically, it's dubious to say the least that it would work. And even more than that, it also doesn't matter if Clemson doesn't have anybody that can play. So let's say Clemson has herd immunity, but the rest
but
of the,
rest
the
of
conference
the
doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the point there? Like, this is, I will say this, I do not trust college football programs in the slightest, many of them at least, to have the best interest of their athletes versus what can we do come hell or high water to get out of the field. But the idea that they would actually come up with a plan to
sicken players,
right, to give them herd immunity, I am not that cynical.
Wouldn't it be, Mace, isn't it going to be unified either way? college football will play.
Well, no, here's the problem. Here's the problem with it, Slee. Here's the problem. It's not unified. There is no tomorrow. We're going to have Larry Scott on, commissioner of the Pac-12. Now, I don't know how much Larry Scott is talking to the head of the SEC or the president of the ACC or the president of the Big Ten. I don't know, because everybody seems to have their own set of rules. Every university seems to have its own set of rules. There is no uniformity in the way collegiate athletics are approaching return from this virus and potentially to have a football season. Everybody is going their own way, which is one of the big problems.
Well, then you have, by the way, it gets more complicated than just conferences and universities. How about then cities, states? I mean, every state has different plans, different rules. But I just think from an NCAA perspective, it's almost as if Major League Baseball, if they can't do it, they're not going to do it. It's same thing with the NBA. And I have to imagine, doesn't college football have to be in the same boat? Even if you do this herd immunity, which sounds extremely bold and a little bit out there to make that argument. But if
I mean,
if
I'm hoping this is just a Boomer Esiason conspiracy theory.
I mean, if that's a strategy, I don't think some schools will be able to play college football and some won't. Maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't sound like that's it has to be something where everybody does or everybody doesn't.
All right. There is your first half of Crosstalk. Coming up next, Alan's going to read something and then he's going to tell us who his guests are tonight.
Yes.
Which is my favorite part of the show. Mason and Ireland. Slee was here. 710 ESPN. Okay, if Sliwa loses tomorrow's hot dog eating contest, he must adopt a pet dog and name it Steve.
Wow.
Doesn't that feel like the most random thing in the world?
Very random, but that's pretty funny.
Shave funny right one eyebrow.
I have two very healthy eyebrows. They're staying put.
You would not shave one eyebrow?
Would not, no.
What about half of two eyebrows? Each.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, why not?
That's a lot different. I'm now in, BK. Now I'm in.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still looking for a good idea. If I win, what does Sliwa have to do? At Venice Mace. All right, so we're just talking about this a little bit off the air, and you might have Antonio Morales on the show tomorrow night. He wrote a great piece for The Athletic about the history of Extra Sports 690, the mighty 690. Which is a station I had the privilege of being part of. We had an unbelievable lineup. Me and John were doing mornings. Then came Jim Rome. Then came the Loose Cannons, which at that point was Chet Forty and Steve Hartman. And then came Lee Hamilton. It was an unbelievable lineup. And a talent that has gone on to be successful all over the place. And Antonio did a really good job of talking about exactly how that station came about and what made it so cool.
It's so great. And, you know, I obviously grew up down in San Diego, but it's great to get the full storyline. Like I, when I was a kid, I used to listen to 690. But to just kind of get this timeline of how it all happened, I worked under John Lynch for, you know, 5 years down in San Diego.
But yep. And John Lynch, by the way, is the father of John Lynch, the general manager of the 49ers.
1090, I was more in the 1090 days, right? That was after LA got sold and everything else. So I love it. It's such a kind of a unique history of sports talk radio, and to have, you know, yourself to be in the thick of that, in the middle of it. I'm sure you go back and read it, and that brings up, you know, sparks a ton of memories from back in the days as well.
Oh, all kinds of memories. And I'll say, you know, I said off the air, John Lynch was crazy. And when I say that, I mean it in the best kind of way. He was crazy passionate about that station. Howard Friedman, our program director, was great to deal with. And the one thing that they did a great job of was they let everybody, they found unique characters, and then they just let them be themselves. And they gave it time. Those are the big things when you're building a radio station. I've been on the programming side, is you find something that works, you find unique characters, you give them time to build an audience. And that's what Lynch and Howard Friedman were responsible for. Now, Lynch could be, there was a point where I had a contract holdout on Lynch. And let's see how this story goes. So I had a contract holdout on Lynch. So I wanted to still do the morning show. I wasn't going to leave. I was going to keep doing the morning show. But I, at night, I wanted to do a talk show with Tom Snyder that I had been offered for CBS. And John Lynch said, well, you can do one, but you can't do both. You're under contract to us. You can't do that Snyder show for CBS. And he filed some sort of injunction against me, so I couldn't take that job. And at one point, John called me and said, let's settle this man to man. And I said, okay, we'll settle it man to man. My man versus your man. And then I had my attorney, my agent at that point was a guy named Ed Hoekstraten, who's a legendary agent. And we went to war. And finally, after 6 weeks, John Lynch caved, but not before he offered me a 10-year contract. A 10-year contract, which I thought, that is the most insane. I don't know if I want to be here in 3 years, let alone in 10 years, a 10-year contract. But he was crazy in a good way. It was a fun place to work. And obviously you can judge by the talent that has come out of there, whether it be Rome or Steve Hartman or Chet Forty was an unbelievable character, unbelievable character. Now, were you old enough to hear Chet Forty?
No, I was not. I started catching, you know, Loose Cannons a little bit later. So, but no.
So you knew Philly Billy Werndell?
Yeah, I knew Werndell
very well.
Philly
Billy Werndell.
Well, you want to talk about a character. He was definitely a character. He was down in San Diego even after the 690 days. He stayed down there for a while.
Yeah, I did a year with Philly Billy.
Philly Billy Werndell.
Philly Billy.
Yeah, he was a character.
John, or Steve, what you were just saying there about Lynch, it is interesting because here's someone, used to play football, very intimidating guy. What was he, like 6'5"?
Really big guy.
Big dude. And, you know, obviously he's running things. And by the time I was working with him, the 1090 days, I mean, he had already established so much. At that time, he sold the station, I think it was to J-Core eventually sold it to iHeart or Clear Channel. And it's interesting to just kind of watch him over the years, just the way he led. I mean, I tell you one thing, he was incredibly captivating. He caught your attention. You put him in the room with clients or something along those lines. Yep. He was one of the best in the business to do it. But it's a great story. It's great to kind of look back and see some of that. Coach John Cantera back in the days as
Coach
well.
Coach so Cantera, yeah. What is he doing now?
I think he's still in San Diego, and I want to say he does some work with one of those sports radio stations.
Yeah. You know, it's I tell the story in the article, but it's definitely a fact. When I was working in Toledo, Ohio, I had this little 3,000-watt radio station that I was programming and doing morning drive. And John Lynch owned a 50,000-watt station doing Top 40 like we were.
You were demolishing that station.
Just crushing it. I was killing this station, this 50,000-watt station. And I really think that the only reason I ended up working for the Mighty 690 is that John Lynch wanted to get me out of Toledo so that his station
Great
could
story.
Do well there. I think that's the only reason I wound up on the West Coast was that. He just wanted me out of there.
Did you know, Steve, when you started working with John, like, did you guys feel you connected right away? Took time? Like, what was it when you guys just started?
No, I thought it clicked right away. I mean, I think you're talking about John Ireland, right?
Yeah.
No, clicked almost right away and knew right away that it was going to work. Knew right away it was a really good partnership. And in fact, if you go listen to, you know, the friendship and the relationship goes a long way back. If you go to the SteveMason.com and look for the John Ireland Culture Pop podcast. We did about an hour and a half about our history, our personal histories, and all the things that we've been through over time. But the one thing that's true is that you know chemistry right off the bat. You know if it's going to work right off the bat. Like, you know, Ireland and I clicked immediately. And you can't force chemistry. You can't just throw two people in a room and say, now do a show. It just doesn't work that way. I knew right away. And like with you and Curtis, when I hear you and Curtis together, I think that's just crackling energy right there.
100%.
Love that sound. That's what I heard last night on your show. I heard you, Kirk Morrison, and Curtis going at it. Great segment. Great segment.
How long did you, what, like, just specifically, what part did you really enjoy?
let's see, you were going through a list of things that was sort of like fast track. Oh, Kirk was talking about his score in Madden.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was very protective about his score.
He claimed he was a 92, and I think Curtis said he was only an 86.
Exactly.
Wow, Steve, that was a good pull.
Curtis wasn't giving him the credit, and we went out, we found the facts. He did have a 92, 2009.
There you go.
Mace, we appreciate
it. No, Alan, you blew it. What? You just realized, like, this is, like, you know, you had an opportunity to psych out, like, Steve, so wrapped up in telling stories about himself.
That was a special moment right there.
Didn't even
it
notice.
Was. It was.
Didn't moment even right notice. There. Like, Alan, you have to learn to take these things and apply them to tomorrow.
Yes.
How you can get Steve off of his game.
Be bold, man.
What can
man.
You do? Be bold. Like, Steve would have gone minutes past his 624.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And we're past 624.
And we're past 624. And you know what? And I am still going to hit the door, but I'm going to remind people of two things. First of all, tomorrow, Larry Scott, commissioner of the Pac-12, will join us. And it will be the warm-up to the great hot dog eating contest between me and Sliwa tomorrow night at 6:15 live, both on air and on all of our social media platforms. Sliwa, prepare to lose.
Mace, I'm going to tell you right now, if you think I'm going to take it lightly and I'm not going to pay attention, I'm 100% not going to do that. I'm all in. I'm going to eat as many of these as I possibly can. I'm going to dip it into the water. It's going to be ugly, and let's see what happens.
Alan, I don't want to hear I'm going to eat as many of these as I possibly can. I want to hear I'm going to eat more hot dogs than you.
No, because I'm not going to pay attention to what Steve is doing. I'm just going to take down as many as I can. 7 minutes, 10 seconds, clock stops, whatever I'm at, I'm at.
Sliwa, taking down the dogs.
No, that is, I want to hear I'm going to beat you.
Why did I write down Wonder Bread buns and Nathan's dogs? It was probably not necessary for me to do that.
Yeah, no, I don't know why you wrote that down.
No idea.
Exactly.
No idea.
All right, Sliwa, what do you got coming up?
Kirk Morrison and Lindsay Theory will be on the show.
Cool. Hey, Brian, thanks a lot, man.
Hey,
let's give you a plug. Tonight is the late night happy hour. Who's on it tonight?
10 o'clock. We are going to go back to our roots. Our original guest, Ben Lyons, is going to join us tonight.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you get a little pop culture action there.
Exactly. The traditional 53rd episode. You always go back to your first guest. That's
is this really
that.
Your 53rd episode?
53 episodes.
Mm. Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Jamie was 52 last night, and tonight is Ben Lyons.
And don't forget, Brian and Andy are doing mornings now on Saturdays. What is that, 10 to noon?
9 to 11.
9 to 11, the Kamenetsky brothers on Saturdays. All right, Sliwa, have a good show. Prepare to lose tomorrow. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.